This episode of East Meets West is brought to you by Ting.com. Ting gives you big savings and billing clarity for mobile phone service. Try their online savings calculator and save $50 on your device purchased at emw.ting.com. Welcome to East Meets West, episode 300. I'm Tom Merritt.
And I'm Roger Chang.
300.
Roger. It sounds like we should be stripped to the waist, fully bulked up, carrying shields and spears.
This is East Meets West.
That sounds very Batman.
This is East.
You have to you have to shout more. You have to, like, every word you shout. Every conversation you have must be like, it has
My
to be a screaming.
My wife's watching a television show in the other room.
Your wife's watching a television show.
That's the source of the Dark Knight's voice.
That gravelly, that and a lot of cigarettes and coffee.
Why do you talk like that, Batman? My wife is always in the other room watching a show.
I have to hide my voice. And if I talk like this,
Batman, keep your crime fighting down in there.
Can you imagine? It's like some kid gives him like a bunch of cough drops. It's for your throat.
Your voice must be a wreck the way you talk.
So a lot's been happened. A lot's happened since the last we recorded.
Roger forgot how to speak.
Same president was reelected. Bunch of political machinations have gone on.
Boy, talk We're still about had more things change the more they say the same.
Yeah.
This election was almost shouldn't have happened.
We essentially got what we had started out before. Yeah.
So we have President Obama reelected as president. We have the Republicans in charge of the House. We have the Democrats with a slim majority in the Senate. And we have the Republicans pretty much coming out of the gate saying, we are not going to work with you at all.
And
so that's it. There you go. That's your next 4 years. Congratulations, America.
And you know what? It's, you know, this is the thing I hate about media. There's this weird habit, and I'm not sure if you noticed it too. When I say media, I explicitly mean American outlets. There's so much navel gazing in the analysis that when people analyze things, they do it from a very, very insular perspective. Well, of course, this obviously means that Obama has a mandate. He did win a big chunk of the Electoral College, but even on the popular vote, it was, you know, a little under a million, I think, around a million that he won over.
Very small when you consider the number of people in this country.
Well, the number of people voted. I mean, that's about 1%. So it's a pretty slim.
Aha! He won by pleasing the 1%.
Well, I was about to say that, and what struck me was, as soon as this is all done, you had your conservative news outlets, you had the liberal, and I use conservative and liberal in a very colloquial
way.
Fox, SMC, or whatever. Everyone had their opinions, and out of the gate, it was like, they have to do this now. And the other side's like, no, we don't. And it's just like, after the entire election, it's still people shouting at you. Shouting at each other instead of actually working with each other. It was a lot of gloating that I've noticed, especially on Twitter. Yeah. At least on my Twitter, there's a lot of gloating. It's like, yeah, whatever. I roll my eyes when people gloat because I know from personal history, just watching a lot of this stuff, it comes around and bites in the ass.
Yeah. And it's like people cheering for their sports team, right? It's great. Cheer for your sports team. You've supported them and they won. But when you start to gloat, it's like you didn't actually play. You know, in the sports game, and I get a little of that same feeling here. Like you didn't actually get elected. You know, it was just the guy you voted for got elected.
And I've wondered, you know, like, will the next 4 years be as I won't say painful, but as stop and go as it was these past 4 years?
Yeah,
and
that's my thought is yeah.
It's like being stuck in like rush hour traffic. Oh, I have an opening. Oh, stop. Oh, I have an opening. Stop. And it's a lot of that. But remember when we used to talk about or the concept of security theater with the TSA and airport security? I noticed that run up to the election, during the election, all that, there was political theater. It was just a lot of drama queens on air, on camera, you know, on Twitter, on social networking. It just seems it's a lot of people talked, but when you actually distill it, not a lot was said.
And that's not unusual. What's interesting is I no longer watch any U.S. television news. In fact, I don't think I watch any television news, hardly.
I don't get really television news except the local.
I don't read any U.S. newspapers for political news. I will read my local Marin County paper to find out what's going on in my vicinity. I will occasionally go to sfgate.com to kind of look up broader issues like, oh, what's going on with the Bay Bridge? You know, what's happening with this or that? But I don't watch Fox News. I don't watch MSNBC. I don't even watch CNN much anymore, if at all. And so I get my news by reading mostly BBC's news app. I read all the tech blogs. So, you know, sometimes stuff filters in through there. I read the Daily Telegraph on my app. On the weekends, I sometimes read the Irish Times. I watch Al Jazeera news a lot on my iPad. So I feel culturally illiterate when I hear people talking about the kinds of things you're saying, which I know are absolutely true. Like, oh, can you believe what people are saying about the election? I'm like, I don't hear any of that because none of my friends are saying it. It's only the people on television and maybe some people in columns that I don't read. So I don't feel any of it at all. And sometimes, most of the time, that's blissful ignorance, right? It's like, you don't need to know that because of what you just said. They're not saying anything. But every once in a while, it bites you in the ass because a narrative is created. And the biggest example I think I may have talked about before was with the kid with the hoodie who got shot down in
Florida. Oh, yeah, Trayvon.
How that turned into an entire political discussion and on the talk shows and everything, and I was dimly aware of it, and I knew the facts of the case, but I didn't realize the whole discussion about hoodies and what the hoodies meant.
I was stuff.
And so I was not in my mind, and I made a comment about a hoodie, a perfectly benign comment about hoodies, and people are like, oh, getting political. And I'm like, what? How is that political? I'm talking about clothing. And so, and it was political. I just didn't realize it. So sometimes that way of getting news is most of the time it's good, but sometimes it's bad not to be keeping tabs on what everyone else is keeping tabs on, because you get left out of memes, essentially.
I had a very similar experience. I mean, I'm the same way. I read a lot of foreign news outlets. I read very few American ones. I'll read maybe occasionally the Times or the Post or the Wall Street Journal or my local – or the LA Times or the local paper, just – especially – the LA Times a local paper, so I can just figure out what's happening in California. But I don't know if you ever experienced this, but for like, you know, good like year and a half, I have read absolutely no American media outlet. And then I started reading again, and it felt like a culture shock. I felt like I was entering an entirely different landscape than what I was reading about in, like, you know, say the BBC or the Daily Telegraph or the CBC or whatever. And it was just I finally kind of understood what people thought of how Americans treat media or rather use media. And, you know, some would say a rather gauche and very, very just very gauche manner. And it just hit me. It's like, holy crap. All I see on these papers are opinion pieces at the top. When I say news stories, I mean on a website, there's like these opinion pieces on the top with a story on the bottom. And so what happens is, like what you were saying, is you have this narrative created, which is, you know, not new. I mean, William Randolph Hearst was kind of famous for that.
It goes back to pamphleteers in the 1700s. I mean, it's a long, long tradition.
But it was definitely an eye-opener. I mean, it really kind of made me resent the state that American media or news media is in, because, you know, wherever you look, it's always like an editorial. It's an editorial. It's an opinion piece. Even the way the headlines are written. And the only place I actually find to be relatively balanced is the news hour on PBS, mm-hmm. because the way they approach it, there is, you know, there's none of that kind of, we have a commercial break, so let's use a headline. A headline we know is going to get you. It's like the Obama tax cut's going to cost you your pension or something. You know what I mean? Like where you have kind of that grab you by the lapels and slap you around so you'll stick around to watch the rest of the news bit.
PBS, I actually watched NewsHour a couple of days before the election, and it felt like watching news in 1986. and not necessarily in a bad way. It was like, oh, right. This is what the nightly news used to be like. You'd set up a package, you'd give it context, you'd go into depth for a little bit, and then you'd move on to the next issue.
I love that.
It wasn't perfect, and PBS isn't perfect. And in fact, I think a little bit of that is that PBS, I remember watching PBS news in the 80s, felt like news from the 70s. I think they're just behind the times. I wouldn't be surprised in 15 years if PBS is doing the headline-grabbing, you know, crazy stuff that we see now on broadcast TV, but... You're right. It's even CNN. CNN, I watched religiously for a long time. I shouldn't say religiously because I did not get down on my knees or pray or anything, but I watched it a lot. I would have it on at my desk at work when I worked at CNET, and I watched it degrade over time as it struggled to keep up in the ratings until I realized they weren't covering news anymore. It was car chase to celebrity scandal. If there was an election going on, maybe a one-sided story about the election. But I finally gave up. I'm like, this just isn't. I'm not getting anything out of this. Like, none of this is interesting. None of this is telling me what's going on in the world. I feel like I'm left out. And just taking 20 minutes in the morning, looking over the BBC News, I know about, you know, most of the major events that are happening in Syria. I know about what's happening in Lebanon and Gaza. I know most of what... I also listen to the Economist podcast, so I kind of know what's going on in Greece and the Eurozone with that crisis, but I get a little extra insight in that. And they still cover the presidential election in the U.S. They still cover Hurricane Sandy. They still, you know, if something's happening in the U.S., it's not like they ignore it. So I just feel like I get a broader perspective, and it is a little Eurocentric, and every once in a while there'll be a story that's about the UK, like the Jimmy Savile controversy. Not really that relevant to me, but most of the time those are the exceptions, not the rule, and easily ignored.
And you know what's totally forgot what I was going to say.
Tell you what, I want to talk about Nate Silver a little bit.
Oh, yeah.
Let's take a break and take this moment. See if you can remember what you're going to talk about. I want to thank our sponsor, Ting, a new mobile service that makes sense. They come from the folks who do Two Cows, same folks that bring you Hover.com. And it's all about bringing billing, clarity, usability, and big savings to mobile phone users. Now, we don't always have advertisements on East Meets West, so we're very happy to have Ting on board. They know that there's not as many of you out there as there might be on other podcasts that either Roger and I are associated with, but they're hoping that maybe you'll give them a shot because they were willing to take a bet on East Meets West. So if you at all are thinking about trying a new mobile provider, go at least take a look at Ting.com. It's Ting.com. It runs on the Sprint network, and their big deal is that they are only going to charge you for what you use. There's none of this like, oh, we've got share everything plan. If you go over, we beat you over the head with crazy rates. It's honest, fair pricing. It bills you by the megabyte, by the minute, by the text message. And if you use less than anticipated, you're not going to get this deal from anybody else. If you use less than anticipated, you're automatically credited the difference at the end of the month. So sure, you sign up for a tier because you think, I'm probably going to use, I don't know, maybe 2 megabytes a month, right? If you use 1 megabyte, they lower you down to the 1 megabyte rate and credit you the difference. The next month, if you use 3 megabytes, they don't give you a penalized rate. They just raise you to the 3 megabyte rate. And you pay what you would pay if you'd signed up from that in the beginning. There's no premiums, no penalties. You just pay for what you use. And they have good phones. They have the Samsung Galaxy S3. They have tons of Android phones. They have an excellent selection of phones. Go check it out. Ting.com. And they're the folks that do Hover and Two Cows, so there's no-wait customer support, 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. You call, they pick up the phone and talk to you right away. They also do email support for the off hours. They have an active discussion forum. So as I mentioned, if you're at all interested, go to emw.ting.com. That's emw.ting.com. That way they know that you heard about them from us, and we really thank Ting for their support. In fact, Ting thanks you for doing that. They're going to give you $50 off on your first device purchase. When you buy that phone, you get $50 off right away. With some of those phones, that makes it pretty darn cheap. That's ting.com/EMW, and we thank them for their support of East Meets West.
They're awesome.
They are. They really are. They're really great. Do you, did you remember what?
Yes.
Oh, okay. What was it then?
So, I don't know if anyone unfamiliar with California politics, one of the things that you can do is to generate, or citizens can, if they get enough signatures, they can put a proposition on the ballot for election. And
other states have similar things. Your state may.
But so two of the standout ones were Proposition 30 and 38, and they were both designed to raise tax revenue, ostensibly to help fund schools, at least the way they were advertised. What I was kind of annoyed with was a lot of people were against 38. And let me explain what 30 and 38 did. 30 just essentially raised I think sales tax by like 0.25%, and but increased the tax rate on those I think earning over $250,000. Well, 38 was more of essentially the same, except that the income tax rate would go up on everyone, less on people earning less than $250,000, and more was progressive. But everyone was so for 30 and against 38 because 38 was backed by a millionaire. And unfortunately, you know, maybe because as they say, the optics weren't good, if a multimillionaire sponsors a proposition, obviously it's bad. But when I started to look at it, I actually thought 38 would, in the long term, would be a better plan, because it earmarked money specifically for education, paying down the debt, and I think one other thing that I can't remember off the top of my head. Well, the other one would just be general fund. So although they market it as a way to kind of pay for, you know, extra to keep junior colleges open, high schools, and all that, that money did not have to necessarily go into that into that area. It was just into the general fund. It could be spent anywhere. I like the idea of having an earmark because it was kind of explicitly forced into that area. And I thought it was just one of those times where, you know, people, it's like, oh yeah, this millionaire is sponsoring this ballot. You don't want to deal with anything with that because, you know, they're rich and obviously they're up to no good. And I thought, it's just, you know what, you know, it's let's have a critical debate on these propositions instead of just kind of
no.
But I don't know. It's just shit like that just really pissed me off because, well, I know.
That's the funny thing about these propositions, especially in California. The whole time I've been here, you'll drive down the road around election time and people will have the normal campaign signs in their yards that they sometimes have for whatever Senate or president. And then you'll see no on 38. And that's it. And if you don't know what they're, and I guess some of that stuff becomes very, very common. But this election, for some reason, I had a really hard time remembering which ones were which. And a lot of other people did too. They're like, wait, what's the genetically modified? Is that 35? No, I thought that was 37. No, 37. And it's like, you know, people couldn't remember. And so you're driving down the road and you see, no, on 38, it's unfair. And I'm like, I don't even know what 38 is anymore. Like, that's not telling me anything. And it is just jingoistic. They don't care what 38 is. They've decided, I don't like a millionaire, I don't like something about it, and they're against it.
And it's just, I don't know. It's just, to me, I think it's a sad fact because it actually hurts the state itself. I mean, it it's like shooting yourself in the foot or cutting off your nose to spite your face.
Who does that?
Who would?
Have you ever met anyone who cut their actual nose off to spite their face?
I've never met anyone, but I'm sure I've read about people who've, what do they call it? When people do, there's an obsession to do surgical procedures on yourself, like cutting.
Really?
But no. I'm trying to remember what it was called.
Yeah, I don't know that one.
But it was kind of creepy, and I kind of stopped reading it because it was gross.
So I did want to talk about Nate Silver, and what made me think of Nate Silver was this whole example I was giving earlier about being culturally illiterate, I thought of Nate Silver as a former fantasy baseball expert who was into politics and was a liberal and who had come up with a way to apply the standards and statistics that he used to be successful at fantasy baseball as well as poker. Apparently, I didn't learn this till recently, but he's a professional poker player, to elections. And 4 years ago, he tried it out. He didn't know if he was going to be successful, and he got pretty darn close to being dead on. So I didn't hear. I heard some people talking about 538.com. I am more of a fan, I guess, if you want to put it that way, of the Iowa electronic markets at the Iowa Business School, the Tippy Business School. And so I was keeping an eye on those because I feel like that kind of crowdsource market gets rid of any human bias at all. And at least most human bias, unless it can be gamed, and it's very hard to game. They make it very hard to game at the Tippy Business School. They do a good job running it, better than InTrade, in my opinion. And so I was paying attention to that. But I would every once in a while I'd pop over to 538 and I'd look at his predictions and his projections, and they seem to jive. And I'm like, yeah, I think it looks like he's doing another good job. So the night of the election, we were covering it live on Twit. I pulled up 538, and here he is. And there, I noticed as I was just kind of scanning through to see if there was stuff that we could talk about on the show, that there are all these defensive posts. And then I started to hear from Justin Robert Young, who was on a show with us, about people like accusing Nate Silver of things and calling him effeminate. And then now after the election, he was pretty much dead on. And all these people are trumpeting like, ha ha, Nate Silver showed you pundits. And I didn't even realize that running up to the election, there were all these pundits who were targeting Nate Silver, who said he was totally going to be wrong. He's going to have egg on his face. And they made their own predictions, and their own predictions were wrong. And they were all way off base, and some of them very insulting. And it just stunned me that, A, I missed all of that in the run-up to the election, that I was able to just entirely avoid and still be aware of Silver and 538 and the amazing math that he did. But then also that people would go after him because he happened to have an unstated bias that they disagreed with. His blog itself, granted, it's at the New York Times, which a lot of people think is a liberal rag. I tend to disagree. I think it's a very centrist rag, if it's a rag at all.
But I depends on their stories. I'm not
talking about op-ed. I'm talking about main stories. They may lean a little left sometimes, but there's certainly many more liberal papers in the world, even in the United States. However, it's like, okay, so yeah, the New York Times isn't a conservative paper. I'll give you that. Wall Street Journal is probably the exact same as the New York Times, leaning the conservative way. They're not nearly as conservative as some people want to make them out to be. Again, not on their op-ed page. And I was like, but that's not enough. It's not. And if you read the posts, he's got rigorous mathematics that he's willing to let you look at and say, this is how I am calculating this. This is why I'm calculating it. This is my margin of error. And so it's not a partisan issue. It's freaking math.
Oh yeah, totally. It's one of those things that as I think people become more invested in a position, especially if they're emotionally invested, you tend to go through a very, I don't want to say a complete change, but you undergo a metamorphosis of sorts where you start disbelieving anything that might be contrary to the views as a biased opinion, incorrect data, or something or another. And you know, it's like pulling out teeth to get that person to change their mind, even if you show them the facts in front of their face. What was this, Karl Rove? I mean, he was the
famous Karl Rove meltdown.
Yeah, it's like, come on. I mean, it's like that guy from Baghdad who said that, you know, absolutely there were no Americans in Baghdad, and right behind him was a company of American, you know, M1 tanks moving in. And it's just like, you know, I mean, I guess for him that was his job, so he had to say that. But for Karl Rove and for others, it's just like, you know, you're gonna die early with that much, you know.
Yeah,
blood boiling in your system or something.
Well, and then there's even on the evening of the election, I posted on Twitter my feelings that should be well known to longtime listeners of East Meets West, that I think the Electoral College is utterly ridiculous.
Oh, yeah. I agree.
And I knew that at this point it was not me being dumb. I knew that Donald Trump had been saying similar things, but I wasn't saying them because Trump said them. And I certainly wasn't saying that Obama lost the popular vote, which he didn't. It was too early to tell who was going to win the popular vote. But I was like, oh, the Electoral College, what a crock. And I made a couple of, sarcastic remarks about it.
What happened?
People started coming after me, and some of them coming after me like, just because your guy lost doesn't mean you have to go after the election. I'm like, my guy didn't even run. if I had a guy, he certainly wasn't in this election, and so it's not about, I didn't vote for either of the people that were getting all the coverage that night, and I tried to say that, and the person's like, oh no, they just wouldn't believe me, and it's like
you can't win, you cannot.
If it was 2000, it would have been the opposite, right?
You
it
can't. It'd
been
win.
Like, oh, you're totally for Gore. That's why you hate the Electoral College.
It's something, I honestly believe, at least in the U.S., politics is the new religion. Maybe it's the same in all Western democracies, but, it's like you cannot, it's like it's blasphemy. Like, you heretic, how dare you? Let me grab a big pile of stones and start tossing them your way. It's just like, come on. It's like, it's the 21st freaking century. You can't just have an intelligent discourse. No, you got to get all angry and huffy, and it's like, what's the point?
Yeah.
I mean, it's to the point where I did something that wasn't even political, and I'll show you how crazy it was. So I made a comment after watching The Simpsons on Sunday, because Nintendo's new video game console, the Wii U, is launching in the U.S. soon. And I made a comment. It's like, oh, the commercial was really bad. It's, you don't know what they, you don't really know what you want, you're buying. And I get all these angry Twitters where people say, well, just because it's not meant for you, or you haven't played with it yet. Or it's like, dude, I'm just talking about the ad. I'm not talking about the stupid.
But I'm not attacking your identity as a person.
Yeah, it's like, I don't understand it. It's just like, do I have to go out and backhand everyone with the back of my hand? It's just like,
no, Roger, violence is not the answer again.
No, the violence is the answer used in the careful doses, I've noticed.
I'm tempted to get snarky, right? I'm tempted to say, well, I'm just going to consider anybody who supports a political party sheep. And someone who can't think for themselves. But that's just lowering yourself down into the rhetoric that is causing,
I don't even
all of
believe
this
that.
In the first place.
I personally don't follow particular. I finally switched over to independent, and it was one of those things. It's just like when I used to get all these political ads in my inbox, it was just like, it's spam. Like, you're not telling me anything useful in your advertisement.
You're talking about your mailbox? Or
yeah, my inbox and my mailbox. Yeah. And it was just a lot of, they would mention, what was at stake, but really it was just a lot of slogans and a lot of catchphrases, and, not enough of what I really wanted to hear was like, okay, so how is this going to affect not on local constituencies, how is it going to affect schools directly? Not, I don't want to hear that money goes to schools. I want to know how the money gets to the school, right? I don't want to, I don't want to hear just very vague, ambiguous, answers or sloganeering. I just want to, it got to the point where I was just very, very fatigued with it. And I figured being an independent would be the best way to kind of clear up my inbox. And, when election time comes, I tend to use a lot of online resources like Ballotpedia to kind of figure out what the ballots do, why they're supported, who supports them, who's against them. I mean, so I can make up my mind instead of having someone shout at me every time I see a new ballot or I see a new proposition or I see a new candidate. I mean, the one thing that was kind of tricky this year is because they redrew all the district lines, so the people that were representing me were no longer representing me. And that was kind of confusing.
Well,
but,
yeah, I had a double whammy because not only did they redraw the district so that I was no longer in San Francisco anymore, I'm now in a district with Sonoma and a bunch of Northern California counties, but they also, Lynn Woolsey, who had represented me up until then, retired. So she wasn't even running anywhere. So it was just, it was wide open. I don't think, I wasn't. In my assembly district, I had two Democrats to choose from because of the new California primary system. But that's neither here nor there.
Yeah, at some point, I mean, the Republicans, at least in the California assembly, the Republicans are a minority. I don't know if that's such a great thing. It's not like I love the Republicans or even like them, but I do think a single party might not be in the best interests of the state. And I don't know. It does get me to worry. Regardless.
Here's what I want to do for the next election. Now that this one's over, and the next one will be wide open. There's not an incumbent, so we'll be picking someone absolutely new. I would like to know. I'm just going to start asking people on the internet, and I plan to do this after the inauguration in January, like actually do a blog post and start spreading it around. But I want to know who should be president 4 years from now. I don't care who it is. I don't care if they're running. I don't care what party they're in. I want to start a conversation about who actually should be president. If we didn't have to run a primary, if we didn't have to have elections, if we didn't have to have parties, who do you think should be president? I asked myself that question this year, and I kind of, three-quarters serious, said Lawrence Lessig, because I think he's incredibly smart, and I think he knows what's going on. But I haven't really looked into it close enough to be like, okay, how would Lawrence Lessig handle foreign policy? How would he handle all of these things that the president has to do? Is he, in fact, qualified to be president of the United States? We got 4 years now to think about this. I really want to have that answer. Even if I can't vote for that person in 4 years, I want to know that answer because that is the goal. That's what we should be working for, is that each and every one of us should know this is the person I really want to vote for. And then we should be changing the system, however slowly, to work towards the point where you can vote for that person. So that's kind of where my head's at. And I'm picking president not actually because it's the most directly affecting my life. It's not. I've always been of the opinion that you should pay more attention to your local races, to your state assembly races, and your congressional state congress races, and your congressional representative in the U.S. House. Those have much more chance to impact your daily life than the president. But the president's the popular one. It's the one that actually everybody does think about already to a certain extent, if they think about it at all. So I don't know. That's my plan. At least it's something.
It's a good plan. Good plan.
All right. Well, that is it for the 300th Spartan episode.
Woohoo! And we are West. Yes, one of the maybe someone could Photoshop Tom and I's heads on the 300 Spartans.
No,
from
don't do that.
What?
It's a horrible idea.
It's not like it would be our bodies. No,
exactly. I've had my head on other people's bodies before.
That's like a total like Joe Weider thing, you know?
Never
when
ends up good. I'm telling you.
All right.
Subreddit.com/BMW, though, is our website. Thanks, everybody. We'll talk to you next time.
Bye.
Visit frogpants.com. Audio program so good, it's like you're there.